Thanks for being with us today. It's Todd Zwillick. Earlier this year, reporter Ryan Gabrielson was snowbound in Wisconsin, holed up in his hotel room skimming the news. He covers courts for ProPublica, and one story he was skimming jumped out.
One of them popped up from the New York Times about a 2002-2003 case Justice Kennedy wrote about sex offenders. And in it, he said that sex offenders who don't get treatment have a startlingly high rate of recidivism, upwards of around 80%.
A disturbing stat, but turns out that statistic was false. It was something Justice Kennedy referenced from a Psychology Today article written by a guy who says he didn't have any research to support that number, but just figured it to be true. In other words, the Supreme Court delivered an opinion setting legal precedent for years to come using made-up facts.
They've just got it wrong.
And that made Ryan start to wonder.
Has this ever happened before? Do they not vet what they put in their majority opinions?
That question sent Ryan Gabrielson down a Supreme Court rabbit hole.
We decided to just expand it out, take a look at what ultimately became 83 cases, and we found seven things and seven opinions that were just demonstrably false or completely baseless.
So give us a sense of some of the false facts or errors or just bad information that you found here.
Part of the fun of this was it was a wide spectrum of things that got messed up on all kinds of different subjects involving all kinds of, you know, different justices. You know, the most egregious was probably the error in, it was a case called NASA v. Nelson. A bunch of scientists at the Jet Propulsion Lab had sued because they didn't want to be subjected to government background checks. Their case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they lost, in part, in an opinion written by Justice Alito, saying, look, these kinds of things that are being challenged here are part of standard background checks that are done by 88% of private American companies. That was based on a court document filed by an outside party who's not part of a legal case before the court, but has a special interest or a special expertise. And in the background check industry groups put together a brief that in that there was a statistic about the 88%. The brief that was filed from the industry groups didn't cite a source. And when I went to ask them, so where's this from? Because when I was doing my own checks, I couldn't independently verify this 88% number. They initially pointed me to a source that I already checked and that didn't match it. And they gave me a whole host of different explanations for, you know, different ways to cut the numbers, to look at them one way or the other. They got a preliminary version of it, all of which proved false. The industry groups now say, we're not entirely sure where that came from.
Ryan, is this intentional misleading, though, or inadvertent falsehoods? Maybe just simple motivated reasoning, right? Lawyers want to make the most persuasive argument. Even somebody in an amicus brief for one side or the other wants to make a persuasive argument, and they say, yep, that fits what I want to say.
I'd say there are instances in what we found in the seven errors. There are examples of all of the above. But there is no question willful, at times, deceit on the part of people who are filing. The Solicitor General has been caught twice in the past 15 years, providing the court information that was, one case it absolutely knew was false, and in another case, the data had been analyzed six different ways incorrectly, all of which just so happened to help the government's case.
So is there any fact-checking at the Supreme Court? There are no Supreme Court investigators. Can someone just say anything under oath in a brief as long as they believe it to be true?
Well, there are state bar associations, and certainly the D.C. bar have rules for lawyers who are submitting the briefs about truthfulness, and you can't intentionally deceive the courts. With that said, you know, justices, is there a formal fact-checking process? There is not. You know, each justice has a staff of clerks who are arguably the best and brightest that our country's law schools have to offer. But as smart as they are, they're not trained as fact-checkers. They're not trained as investigators or researchers. They are lawyers that don't know how to do this kind of work. And the justices are very much the same thing.
So, Ryan, we all make mistakes. I don't want to say that journalists intentionally stretch the truth ever, but we have a corrections process in our business. If we get something wrong, we correct it on the air. People correct it in print over at our colleagues at newspapers. Do Supreme Court justices or the lawyers that argue before them get a chance to make a correction when they get it wrong?
They absolutely get a chance, and they do. Increasingly, they do it in a more transparent way because they've been call to the carpet on this. There was a law professor at Harvard, Richard Lazarus, who wrote a really excellent, expansive piece examining how the Supreme Court corrects its errors and how sort of opaque that process has historically been. And so the court in recent years has started posting those corrections, the content of them, and not so much necessarily why, but just to fix factual errors. And you can look those up on their website now. But that's a fairly recent change. And what they definitely have not done is reconsider opinions or their rulings in cases where the factual errors at least were cited as central to the argument they're making.
And that raises one of the final questions here, Ryan, which is, so how important are these errors in the end?
That's really hard to know. The majority of the 83 cases that I examined did not have a single assertion, a statement about how the real world works. Only 24 of the 83 did. But when they are used, they are generally central to the argument. Even if they're doing it after the fact, where they're trying to justify the decision they've come to separately, these errors can have really broad ramifications in shaping public opinion about how things work. The sex offender statistic was cited over and over again, and it became sort of a de facto, generally accepted truth that sex offenders were sort of perpetual threats out in the world. And that, you know, that was really based on nothing. But a Supreme Court, you know, majority opinion echoes down for decades, centuries in some cases.
Ryan Gabrielson is a reporter for ProPublica covering the U.S. justice system. Hey, Ryan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.